This is KERA News. I'm Rachel Osier-Lindley. State lawmakers face a tightening budget this legislative session. They have about $105 billion in state funds to spend. That's almost 3% less than what they had 2 years ago. At the Texas Capitol, there's a growing debate about whether to make up for that shortfall by dipping into the state's savings account. It's called the Rainy Day Fund. Ben Philpott follows the state legislature for KUT, the public radio station in Austin.
The Texas Senate and Republican lawmakers in general have said, let's not spend the rainy day fund. That's the economic stabilization fund that the state has. It's going to be close to $12 billion here by the end of the budget that they're writing right now. Some lawmakers have said, we just shouldn't touch it at all. It helps with our bond ratings. The state Senate appears to not be interested in spending any of it. But the House, it's the appropriations leader, the budget writer there, has said, you know, we might have some reason to spend a little bit of it, you know, not all of it, but yeah, maybe $3 or $4 or $5 billion from it to help, ease the possibility of cuts across the budget.
KERA wants to know what you want to know about the Texas legislature. It's a project we're calling Texas Decides. Send your questions about the legislature to us at keranews.org. We'll answer them throughout the legislative session. The NBA is now joining the NFL with a warning to Texas about a proposed bill that critics say targets transgender people. KERA's Eric Austin reports.
The NBA issued a statement suggesting that Texas could be overlooked for future big events, like the All-Star Game. That's if state lawmakers pass a so-called bathroom bill. The bill would require people to use bathrooms that correspond to the sex on their birth certificate. The proposed bill is similar to one in North Carolina. That law prompted the league to move this weekend's All-Star Game out of Charlotte. NBA spokesman Mike Bass says an environment where people are treated fairly and equally weighs heavily when the league chooses host locations. Texas has hosted 3 All-Star Games since 2006. The NFL issued a similar statement earlier this month. The league raised the prospect of Texas losing out on future Super Bowls. That's if there were laws that were discriminatory or inconsistent with the league's values. In Austin, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick has been pushing for the so-called bathroom bill. But Texas House Speaker Joe Strauss has said it is not a priority. Eric Austin, KERA News.
Diseases brought by explorers to the New World are thought to have killed millions of American Indians. Today on Think, Chris Boyd talked with historian Andres Hernandez about how enslavement also leads to the death of people in the indigenous to North America.
The first island colonized by the Spanish is called the Hispaniola or Española, which means the Spanish island, because that was the only speck that they controlled. That had the largest gold deposits in the Caribbean. And so as many as 10,000 Indians were made to work in these mines, and the conditions were really harsh. So to pin it all on biological conditions is to really reduce something to one cause, which was significant, but it was hardly not the only cause. And if you look at the documentation, a lot of the documentation really tells about exploitation, about lack of food, about clashes with the Indians, and that is a very big explanation of that decimation.
Andres Resendez is the author of The Other Slavery, the uncovered story of Indian enslavement in America. He's in town for the symposium Indians at the Center, Rethinking U.S. History and Geography, sponsored by the UTA Center for Greater Southwestern Studies. This episode of Think re-airs tonight at 10, and you can listen to the podcast at think.kera.org. Recently, the Dallas Symphony announced its next season, starting this fall. There's no way it wasn't going to be special. Its music director, Jaap van Zeden, says farewell before taking over at the New York Philharmonic. But KERA's Justin Martin sat down with Art and Seekstrom Weeks to find out why this particular concert lineup was getting so much attention in classical music circles.
Jerome, even I know what this is. It's the theme from A Clockwork Orange.
Right. It's the theme from A Clockwork Orange.
I'm kidding. It's obviously it's Beethoven's Ninth. And here is Bach. And who else is on the season? There's more Beethoven, Rachmaninoff, there's Mozart. I guess what I'm saying is, aren't these what symphony orchestras play all the time? I mean, why are people excited about this season?
You're right. These works are like some of the basic building blocks of Western classical music, but you generally don't get to hear all of them in a single season. Like, that's Bach's fifth Brandenburg Concerto, and the DSO is going to play all six. And Beethoven, there are three Beethoven symphonies scheduled, plus two of his piano concertos and two of his overtures. So there's a spirit of celebration in all this. Von Swieten has crammed the season with glorious crowd pleasers.
Yeah, I noticed that Beethoven's Ninth, the Ode to Joy, has been saved for Von Swieten's very last concert next May. But that's getting to be cliche, isn't it? I mean, celebrating just about any special occasion by playing the Ode to Joy, it wouldn't surprise me if they're playing it when they open new supermarkets.
Yeah, well, some of the programming choices are not all that original. For instance, this next season also marks the 40th anniversary of the Lay family organ in the Meyerson. So we have concerts with organ music, which is welcome. They need to use that organ more. But naturally, we're getting the single grandest, best-known orchestral piece ever composed for the organ. That, of course, is Camille Saint-Saëns' Symphony No. 3.
Wow, I mean, listening to that, that's pretty impressive. I wonder, what's wrong with a season of crowd pleasers?
Oh, yeah, it's gorgeous. There's nothing wrong with crowd pleasers, except, as you noted when we started, that means these works are pretty familiar. Everyone's heard them. So you got to bring something fresh to it. It's like a theater company staging a popular Shakespeare comedy like Midsummer Night's Dream. There's nothing wrong with that choice. But what do they do to make it come alive this time? Which brings up something interesting about the season. Von Swieten isn't conducting everything we've mentioned, but the music he has chosen to conduct personally is overwhelmingly by the great German and Austrian composers, Mozart, Wagner, Beethoven.
That music, Von Swieten said 10 years ago, he thought the DSO needed to learn. That's the music he was going to drill into them.
Right. What that means is this season is like a victory lap. Von Swieten is showing us what he's accomplished with this orchestra. They can climb these mountains now. I mean, he's chosen big works, symphonies with a chorus and soloist, like Beethoven's Ninth or Mahler's Second Symphony. Mahler's Second Symphony is so big, it's typically released on two CDs.
Yeah, but among some New York critics, what I've seen online, that's been the knock against Von Swieten. He's too tied to that kind of music. He doesn't really welcome new works.
So that's why I think Von Swieten's making a point. With that last concert with Beethoven's Ninth, it opens with a world premiere of an American violin concerto. So, he can do classic. He can do new.
Huh. Thanks, Jerome.
It's a pleasure, Justin.
I'm Rachel Osier-Lindley, and you're listening to KERA News. It's 6:30.